From Edge Radio 99.3 FM, this is an edit of The Dice Men Cometh, the podcast.
The Dice Men Cometh!
Yes, ladies and gentlemen, we are here, Trent and Mark, on Edge Radio 99.3 FM for The Dice Men Cometh back again for another week to talk board games and card games because the board game and or the card game is a metaphor for life. That's right, nothing less. Because what is life if not a gathering of friends around an arbitrary set of badly written rules that you're trying desperately to understand while you crush the people around you? And eventually, of course, you get frustrated and you start to swear at your friends and then you just resort to drinking lots. You see what I mean. Okay, coming up tonight on the show, we'll be talking powering up your game to the next level. What do we mean? If you've got your friends hooked on a gateway game, where to go next? We'll also be talking to Sean and Anthony from 93 Made Games about their current Kickstarter based in Melbourne Town here in Australis. Monster Town, available now to back on Kickstarter. We'll be finding out all about that, and we'll be talking Steve Jackson Games here on The Dice Men Cometh. Now, if anyone is of a delicate disposition, I would perhaps encourage you to leave the radio alone for a little bit and maybe come back in just a couple of minutes, because this, boys and girls, to get us started on the Dice Men Cometh, is Danzig! Continuing the theme of the shortest men in metal that we've established here on the Dice Men Cometh, that's Danzig on Edge Radio 99.3 FM. From his 1992 album, I think, Unreconstructed Metal. Trent and Mark here, or at least one half of the duo. Mark is running a little bit late tonight, but we're going to press ahead. He'll be joining us shortly, but I thought, hey, look, he's not actually physically here in the studio right now, so I thought I'd actually take the time to bring you him in disembodied, pre-recorded form with an interview that he put together earlier in the week with Sean and Anthony from 93 Made Games. You might be familiar with their little card game Viewpoint, produced right here in Australia. The guys are going to talk about that and their brand new Kickstarter, Monster Town. Here's Mark.
So here I am with Sean and Anthony from 93 Made Games.
Thanks for having us. We're really privileged to be here.
Absolutely. Thank you very much.
We found about you guys. You have launched a couple of games. Now, before we talk about those, tell me, what have you been getting to the table lately of other people's games?
Suppose, how old's Magic the Gathering now? I could say that I've been playing that for over 20 years, and I consistently do that. We've got a good gaming group. We stick to Legacy.
I myself, the last game I played was Around the World in 80 Days.
Oh, yes.
And I found that game quite intense, actually. I did manage to get Around the World in less than 80 days.
Well done.
Very good games, actually.
Excellent. So it sounds like you spend a bit of time playing games, but obviously you probably spend a lot more time making games. You want to tell the listener about 93 Made Games, firstly where the name comes from and where you started?
It was a bit of a cheeky sort of naming for us, because if you look on a barcode of every Australian product, first two numbers are 93. As for how we started off, well, basically Sean and I worked in the same place. Sean likes playing games. I was an artist. He asked if I wouldn't mind doing a couple of drawings for him because he was constantly trying to make his own games.
And around that same time, we were looking for other people to get in on the act. We were developing a range of games, which we eventually just had to cut down and realize that our aspirations of producing the next customizable card game might have been a bit lofty for a first-time game design company.
So from what I understand, you pretty much do everything in your game, from design right through to production. Is that right? An artist?
That is correct. I'm the onboard artist for the team. I'm a bit of a control freak in that regard, but
I'm probably more the business side of things. in my day job. I'm a project manager, so I deal with the budgets and the schedules, and it was a natural progression just to go in and do that side of the business as well.
And so some of our listeners may even have heard of, hopefully they've heard of, your game Viewpoint, which came out to quite some accolades.
Yeah, we had Viewpoint and Viewpoint Reflections. Both were shortlisted for the Board Games Australia Game of the Year Award. So we're pretty proud about that. And it just, it came out. We ran tournaments for it as well, so prize support. So we really wanted to get the community involved. Just a game, but, you know, a bit of an experience, getting everyone to play it.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Seeing the people having so much fun with it was a real big reward for us. Not to mention seeing some of the players advance to the point where we couldn't even play them, to be honest. Some of them developed their own strategies we didn't even think of. And just seeing them take on the game like that.
Exactly.
I guess that's what every designer dreams of, doesn't it? Like people sort of grabbing their idea and running with it.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. And, bringing the business side back into it again, we knew we had a great idea, but how do we implement it? And it's, you need a printer. The unfortunate thing is we would love to be able to print in Australia, but the cost of doing so is so high. So
yes.
That's where we just had to go out and engage in with Chinese manufacturers and get prototypes and just whittle it down until we had the right lot of gameplay through the playtesting, the right artwork for the time as well. And then you have to pick the time of launch. So it was 2009 when second year of Gen Con in Australia, and it just seemed to all line up, all the ducks lined up.
The exciting time now, you've got a Kickstarter.
We do.
Yes, Monster Town is the name of the game. It's been in the works for quite a while. It was, 5 years. 5 years. You can see Sean doing a hand signal to me. Been a progression through the whole thing from when we first designed the concept. It's just evolved through, I think, probably about 10 different versions. So, on our website, you can actually see the differences in the artworks. And even me as the artist, I was just hesitant to show people the original artwork because this is like, I cannot believe I considered that what we chose. But
the essential concept of the game is we like zombies, strange enough. We like werewolves and we like vampires. So it's a gang warfare game. Game where you explore the town and you capture locations and they give you a certain amount of points, and then if you haven't captured enough locations by the end game, you then get into a free-for-all rumble where all the different races clash with each other. What we kind of introduced in Viewpoint was sort of cards which you could add to the base deck and customize. Mm-hmm. We want to go a little bit further because, once again, getting on the customizable card game side of things, we want to expand the game by including new games, new cards that you could add to the existing games. The community that we want to build up by allowing them to not just play a stock standard out of the box game, but something that they can create with.
Yeah, and I can see you've got planned to have the regular expansions, a bit like the sort of the Fantasy Flight Living Card game.
Yeah, exactly. We've got them subscriptions where each quarter we're releasing a set amount of cards that we're starting off with a conservative amount, which is 4 per quarter. And then if we reach our first stretch goal, it's 8, and second it's 12. So if we're really successful, the people will be getting an extra 48 cards.
And then there's some of the very large prizes, which are...
Oh, yes.
The opportunity for one of the backers, if they pledge their amount, is to design their own gang and work side by side with us, and we will actually design their gang and also use their likenesses as some of the characters.
And print it. And so this will be in circulation as well.
Great, and so this Kickstarter's only been going for a few days, but I can see you've reached almost a quarter of your target already in just a few days.
Yeah, we're pretty happy with that. But when we went to a couple of Kickstarter seminars, they said the threshold for a successful, critical mass for a successful Kickstarter is 33%. So we're looking at that, and I think basically we've been going around to each of the clubs, and so we're doing a Monster Town tour. We actually dressed up at the launch event in Zombie
and
Planet
Ah,
really? Yeah.
So we it's kind of not just it's not just Kickstarter, Please Pledge. We actually want to get a whole lot of people involved in this because after Kickstarter, there's still the playing the game with people.
Exactly. Yeah.
I suppose that takes us into a side point. Not only are we designers and publishers, but because we want to support the Australian game design industry, we've started doing distribution through our channels because we self-distribute as well. We are helping just the first one, a company called Blue Room Games, and their first game, Ninjutsu. So we're also distributing alongside Viewpoint, their game. And you know, if any of your listeners are budding game designers, please give us a holler and we'll see what we can do to get your game distributed through our channels.
Like, we think the rest of the world will benefit from seeing Australian games. You know, we've got some original minds in this country.
I think, yeah, the sort of Australian larrikinism, we know how to have a joke with ourselves. So you've got the whimsical games, and then you've got the serious side where people come up with extremely original ideas on sci-fi or fantasy or just gameplay in general.
So Sean and Anthony from 93 Made Games, thank you so much for joining us on The Dice Men Cometh. And we look forward to seeing how your Kickstarter goes. So good
luck. Thank you very much, Mark.
Thank you, Mark.
And if you missed any of those details on the Kickstarter or how to contact the guys at 93 Made Games, we'll have all of those on the Dice Men Cometh Facebook page. This is Edge Radio 99.3 FM. City Calm Down, Burn Slow and the Benny's Party Smasher on Edge Radio 99.3 FM with Trent here on the Dice Men Cometh. Although at the moment it's actually the Dice Man Cometh. My offsider Mark hasn't joined us this evening. Can I be completely honest with you? I've actually got no freaking idea where the man is. He may be joining us before the end of the show. Your guess will be as good as mine. Stick around and we'll find out. In the meantime, we're going to try and plow on regardless. And one of the things that I had planned to have a little bit of a talk about tonight is a game company that's been particularly influential for over 20 years now, remains so, one of the best known game companies, certainly for those of us who are actually involved in the hobby and probably for those of us on the fringes as well, contemplating becoming serious gamers. I'm talking about Steve Jackson Games. Very influential, very well known, very successful, but often hated by gamers. You could argue perhaps even universally so. Why is that? Well, primarily that hatred seems to be centered around the success of their Munchkin property. What's Munchkin? If you're into games at all and you don't know what Munchkin is, well, look, I doubt it, frankly, if you've gotten this far in the show. Munchkin came out originally in 2001. It essentially distills the role-playing Dungeons & Dragons experience down into the simple flip of a card where you open a door, you kill a monster, and maybe you get the treasure, maybe you don't. Everybody's competing with each other, first to, I think it's level 10. Look, it's fine. It actually came out of an earlier game that Steve Jackson did in 1999 called Shea Geek, which was about apartment living. We've all been there. Thank God those days are behind me. Art by John Kovalik. He's probably familiar to you if you know the Dork Tower. And look, it's been a massive success. And I think because it's such an easy to learn game, it's very, very. Look who it is! Ladies and gentlemen, coming through the door as we speak.
Citadels!
Mate, sit yourself down, explain yourself.
Let me grab a breath.
Hey, listen, I was just talking.
I just heard you on the radio saying you had no idea where I was. I'll send you a text.
Did you hear me talking about Steve Jackson Games?
While I was running. I heard you saying, "Where is he?"
I was trying to explain the appeal of Munchkin.
There is none.
Yeah, true. But nonetheless, Steve Jackson Games in 2012 managed to earn themselves $7 million. That's gross. That's before tax. Munchkin was a huge part of that.
It's been in the top 10 selling take a breath. Top 10 selling board games for like the last 10 years.
Now listen, I'm going to make you explain yourself in just a minute, but I'm going to finish talking about Steve Jackson Games first, all right? You can catch your breath.
Yep.
Take a chill pill. Steve himself, he started the company back in 1980. He's a law student, dropped out in 76 to make games. The first design he came up with, it was called Ogre. This was the game of tank warfare, asymmetrical game, a whole bunch of little tanks versus one giant ogre thing, released in 1977 for just $2.95 you could buy it for. And that's in contrast to the relaunch of the game in 2012 through Kickstarter that managed to raise, and I'm not kidding, $923,000.
Amazing!
Of the original $20,000 that they wanted. And this turned into one of the biggest, ugliest, heaviest boxes, 11 kilos it weighed. If you wanted to buy this thing, it cost a fortune to ship. So that's Ogre. Another big title for Steve Jackson Games, Car Wars, which originally came out in 1981. And if you were a teenager in Australia at that time, there was really nothing cooler happening in Australian cinema at that time than Mad Max 2, aka The Road Warrior. And this was essentially the board game of that, although your cars were little cardboard cutouts, if you remember that. And it never really worked. It was a pretty lousy system. They relaunched it. Well, again, it never went away. It got turned into an RPG. Auto Duel is still supported. There's still a community for this. There was a fifth edition in 2002 that used Matchbox cars. Apparently, there's going to be a new version of it. Steve Jackson, a lot of people get him confused, though. Around about the same time as Car Wars came out, there was the first fighting fantasy game book. Now, do you remember these?
Yes.
Warlock of Firetop Mountain.
Oh, yes.
City of Thieves. Yes. Death Trap Dungeon. The first one of those came out in 82. Little bit of confusion, though, because they were written by the UK Steve Jackson.
By the same guy, yeah. Well, not the same guy, same name.
Same name, but it gets even worse. So you've got a Steve Jackson in the UK and a Steve Jackson in the US.
Yes.
In Atlanta, where Steve Jackson Games is based.
And Georgia.
Steve Jackson from Atlanta actually wrote some of the fighting fantasy books. credited as Steve Jackson.
From the UK.
With no differentiation.
Oh, no.
Between the two. In 92, the Illuminati game came out. Mark, this is significant for you and I.
I know. Illuminati was how we met, Trent. You introduced me to the game of Illuminati.
And look, it's not a great game, but at the time there wasn't really anything else like it. It's based on the Illuminatus trilogy by Robert Anton Sheeh and Robert Wilson. All sorts of spooky conspiracies. This is the X-Files, but like way before the X-Files.
Yeah, yeah, and really early days.
Yeah, and very, very funny game. You know, dated now, but I still have such a soft spot in my heart for this game.
Yeah, and for its time, really cutting edge, literally. I mean, this is way before Magic, wasn't it?
Absolutely. Yeah. And there was... That got turned into a collectible card game, Illuminati New World Order. Then there was a new Illuminati Crime Lords, and there was Illuminati Hacker. Then there was the Deluxe Edition. Then there were the expansions. Are you detecting a theme here with Steve Jackson Games?
He likes his expansions.
I'll come back to that.
He knows how to milk a cash cow.
Exactly. Then there was GURPS, what's an acronym? Generic Universal Role-Playing System, which came out in 86. Not quite the first sort of genreless role-playing system, but probably the most successful. So yeah. The idea was that there was a universally applicable role-playing rule system that you could apply to any scenario. Because prior to that, it had been, you know, here's your medieval setting, yes. Here's your science fiction setting. This was a set of rules that you could apply to anything. That's up to the fourth edition, GURPS now.
Yeah, still going strong today. And as you said, basically the mechanics over which you can paste any theme.
But, of course, since it first came out, there's now all sorts of GURPS settings that are available, which is perhaps beside the point, maybe a contradiction in terms. I'll leave that up for you to decide.
Steve, he's milking away.
But there was a particular one, GURPS Cyberpunk, which came to some infamy in 1990 when the US Secret Service raided Steve Jackson's headquarters in Atlanta. Do you remember this story?
No.
Okay, so one day, entirely out of the blue, the Secret Service kicks down the door at Steve Jackson Games.
Did they turn over a card?
They swiped all the computer gear.
Oh, wow.
And the whole thing took 3 years to go through court, and it eventually ended up with, I think they got about maybe 50, 60K in damages plus all the legal fees.
Wow.
Which were about 10 times that.
And
okay.
Was there some hint as to that they had stumbled upon an Illuminati-type plot that the US government were hatching? Or?
It wasn't so much Illuminati. It was the GURPS cyberpunk book, which, because what was happening, the writer of that was running a BBS. Do you remember what a BBS was?
Yes, I do. A bulletin board service.
So kind of a...
Hang on, Sonny, I will up my chair.
A forerunner of your modern internet forum.
Yeah, yeah.
The nearest comparison would be something like Reddit now, I suppose, which, you know, it still harkens back to that. But he was running a BBS trying to fact-check his cyberpunk cool, I suppose, and get some of his hacker terminology right.
And the hackers were talking to him.
Secret Service cottoned onto this. They took the GURPS cyberpunk draft booklet and said, this is a handbook for computer crime. And they're going, no, it's a game, really. And they wouldn't believe it.
Oh, wow.
They wouldn't believe them. So, look, like I said, it eventually went through court and Steve Jackson Games were vindicated in the end. Still to this day, the GURPS cyberpunk handbook has a little thank you to the US Secret Service for unsolicited comments. And I think that's another theme of Steve Jackson Games, and maybe one of the reasons that they have been so successful is that they've always had a good sense of humour.
Yes.
They haven't taken themselves too seriously, but yes, they do know how to milk a cash cow.
Oh, yeah.
This is the Edge Radio 99.3 FM.
With Trent and Mark.
The Dice Men cometh. Mark will be explaining himself next. Freaky G from Taswija on the Dice Men Cometh. Edge Radio, 99.3 FM. Trent and Mark.
Yeah, I made it.
What's your excuse?
I don't think I have one. I was working for the man, and, you know, like, I do work in a telephone-based industry, and when Mr. Customer calls up just before the end of the shift... He doesn't like the excuse, I'm sorry, I've got to run and do a radio show about board games. So I did have to stay and finish that particular transaction, which was perhaps one of the most indecisive customers I've ever had in my life.
I need another explanation out of you as well, because you weren't here, so I played the interview that you did with...
I heard it while I was driving in the car to the radio station. It sounded pretty good.
Did you hear how bad your Skype connection sounds?
Yeah.
What's going on with that?
Hey, it's the NBN. I don't know.
You're on the NBN.
I am on the NBN. Well,
so is Malcolm Turnbull outside your house pulling the cable up out
of
the ground?
I think he was. The monkeys were definitely not pedaling very hard that night for some reason.
Well, let's talk about what we've been playing lately.
Okay.
Anyway, because it's normally what we do.
Absolutely. And we're only 40 minutes late.
Hey.
Talking about it.
You been playing anything?
I have been playing an old favourite. I hadn't played it for ages, and I got a request from a friend to play Small World.
Oh!
Yeah, the fabulous game, 2009, Philip Kayetz, who took a really, really dull game called Vinci,
yep,
that no one loved, or no one of any circumstance anyway, and turned it into a fantastic game, Small World, about a whole bunch of different races competing to control a world that clearly is too small for all of them.
And this is a classic case of you had a pretty good rule system, but that game Vinci had almost no theme.
Yeah.
And you just pasted a sort of colourful fantasy theme over. And you know what? Something we've talked about before, they avoided the whole chainmail bikini syndrome. In the art.
Yeah.
You know, it's very...
although the Amazons do wear leafy bikinis.
Yeah, but it's sort of...
But hey, they're Amazons.
It's not a sort of sexual thing
at all.
It's very cartoony, well-painted art.
And, you know, look, this is another one from Days of Wonder. They're fantastic production qualities. Really high quality, thick cardboard tokens and a beautiful board and a simple rule system. Anyway, we played that, and the reason why that person wanted to play was they hadn't played with the Tales and Legends expansion, which is a deck of cards where you've got about 60 cards and you only actually use one card for each turn. So in our five-player game, we had eight turns. So we only used eight of the 64 cards. And it's like a different special ability each turn. But the great thing is you get a foretelling of that. So in the first turn, there's none. And then you flip over the one that's coming in the next turn. So you sort of get a warning of what's going to happen in that turn. And then you can decide to whether you want to implement that in your strategy or not.
So what kind of events are we talking about?
One event was all your races going to decline at the start of the turn automatically. So you basically got
just
turn.
Just one player? Or?
No, every player.
Oh.
Another one was you weren't allowed to conquer any area with forests on a particular turn. Another one was you did an auction, and the person who won the auction got to pick any special ability any race that was in the list of races that you could pick next, and put that aside for the next time that they got to pick a race, so they could mix and match. So really sort of like a bit of chaos, but because you get a forewarning of it in the turn before, you can sort of plan for it. So it made it quite interesting.
And it keeps it on an even playing field.
Yeah.
That sounds really good.
It was quite fun. I quite like it. I'll definitely be playing it again. Small World with the Tales and Legends expansion.
Now, I've got to kind of scratch my head here because I played this one a little while ago, Ghost Stories.
Oh, yeah.
I played this as a part of our 12 hours of gaming day on International Tabletop Day. Another one by Antoine Bowser, who has made the game that is my nemesis, of course, Seven Wonders. Yeah. Typically first-class production from the man. Beautiful artwork. It's a Chinese-themed ghost story. It's okay. So you got I was going to say samurai, but that's not right, is it? That's Japanese.
You've got your little Chinese village.
You've got a grid of locations, and you've got your little Chinese swordsman, and you can move around. Each location gives you a special action. And all while you're doing that, on all four sides of this little square grid, there are ghosts coming at you, different colours, blue, red, and...
And it's cooperative, isn't it?
It's a cooperative game, and you're trying to fight the ghosts off, stop them sort of amassing in the middle. This was very much a learning game for me. Leon from the Hobart Game Society was sort of talking me through this, and he kept telling me how hard this game was, and it does come with that reputation.
Yes, I've heard that. I've never played it, and I've always been curious about it.
We caned it.
Oh, really?
We absolutely caned it, and I don't
good think dice rolling or does it have dice?
No, I think it was just more of a. It doesn't have dice. It's more sort of card based. Oh, look, there are some dice used for combat, but it's all about what colours you roll on the dice. Look, all I can think is that we had the full contingent of four players, which Leon was telling me he didn't normally get around the table for that particular one because he hadn't played it that much. All I can think of is that maybe there might be a problem with the scaling of it and the difficulty of it. Ghost Stories, very attractive looking game.
Yeah, it looks beautiful.
I do want to play it again, and I want to see if I can maybe adjust the difficulty, or hey, maybe we just got lucky. Yeah.
Sounds great.
So, yeah, we played that at the International Tabletop Day, like I said, our last big event for the Hobart Game Society, and we've already got the date
for our next big event.
Exactly, Hobart Winter Games Fest 4. Coming up on August the 9th and the 10th as a part of a much larger event. Actually, a much larger umbrella event.
Devil Island Con, for the first time, the inaugural Devil Island Con.
That's right, which has been put together with the help of our local friendly game store, Area 52 here, and it's going to be at the Best Western Hotel on the 9th and the 10th. Mark it in your calendar. If you're listening to this as a podcast somewhere else in Australia and you're thinking about, hey, maybe a little trip down to Taswegia at that time of the year to play board games inside while it's cold outside, doesn't sound too bad. Flights are cheap.
Absolutely. And, you know, we do get comments on the Facebook page about how fun it seems to be playing games in Hobart. Here is your chance to experience it firsthand. You're going to have us, Trent and Mark will be there all weekend, all our buddies from the Hobart Games Society.
We're trying to attract people.
Yeah. Look, we'd love to have you come from interstate. There's special accommodation rates right at the hotel where you're playing, so you can literally fall out of your bed, play games all day, fall back into your bed, maybe have a drink or two in between for two whole days. It's going to be fantastic.
And we'll be getting some details on our Facebook page very soon. Just mark the dates in your calendar at this stage. You mentioned Small World.
Yes.
Excellent gateway game.
Yes.
But what happens once you've played Small World and you want to power up to the next level?
Power up.
We'll talk about that next on The Dice Man Cometh. Black Fox.
Stag.
I just like saying stag.
Stag!
Stag! It's Radio 99.3 FM on The Dice Men Cometh. We're talking powering up your games.
Want to level up.
We often talk about gateway games, getting your friends into playing some games. Mm. Let's say you've done that and you want fresh challenges.
Yeah, absolutely. So there's so many great gateway games. Let's start with the classic Settlers of Catan. You know, you've played Settlers of Catan, you really want to challenge your friends. You want to blow their heads right off with what's out there in this gaming world?
Because let's face it, Settlers is a great game, but you're farming.
Yeah, you get tired of
it. Yeah.
Look, there's so many great games out there, and I was thinking, what's something that has a little bit similar to Settlers but nothing? Probably two things came to mind. One actually was the Warcraft, the board game that we saw played out at the 12 Hours of Power Gaming at the Hobart Game Society Tabletop Day.
You're not just saying that because it's got hexagons.
No, well, I am a bit, but it has got hexagons and it's got little wooden meeples. And then, look, another one that came to mind for me, if you really want to blow the top right off, you'll need someone to explain it to you, though, because it's a very complicated game, is Terra Mystica.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Are you kidding? You can't go from Settlers of Catan to Terra Mystica. No. That's just crazy.
Look, here's what you want to do. You want to go from Settlers. You probably want to go up to something that introduces a few more things. A classic example being Lords of Waterdeep, a simple worker placement game.
Okay. Look, I think as far as worker placement games go,
yep.
And I think if you look at the sort of rural, pastoral theme of Settlers of Catan, I think the next logical step would be something maybe like Stone Age or maybe Agricola, surely.
Settlers isn't really worker placement, you see, that's the thing, but Lords of Waterdeep
okay,
is.
Okay, that is true,
yeah,
yes.
Yeah. Lords of Waterdeep yeah, definitely is. Well, yeah, look, Stone Age is not bad. The one that I had thought of that is worker placement, quite similar, has another fantastic theme, just like Lords of Water, but you could really get into, and a little bit similar, is Pillars of the Earth.
Okay.
A game, beautiful graphic representation, quite simple, and the game sort of builds over time, so it doesn't start off being too complicated.
And it's about building a church.
Yeah, that's right. So, you know, I think that would work. Pillars of the Earth would work really well.
Okay, I'll take that one. You mentioned Lords of Water, Dave.
Yes.
Sorry, but because, look, this is the Dungeons & Dragons-themed worker placement game.
Yes.
And I think if you, again, because I'm all about theme in a game, and I think if you want to stay in that dungeony realm and stay with a worker placement theme, what about something like Dungeon Pets? Vlad of Shvartal, an amazing Hungarian?
Czechoslovakian.
Thank you. Designer. Who does,
Czech Republic, I should say.
Thank you. Who does make very, very complicated games.
Yeah.
But the theme of that is that you're actually the bad guy running the dungeon. You've got to feed all the monsters that are in it.
Well, Dungeon Pets, you're actually creating selling monsters to the people running dungeons. Then you've got Dungeon Lords, where you're the guy running the dungeon. Look,
the adventurers keep coming in and knocking all your creatures off.
I'd say that's too much of a leap because they are quite complicated games. But I like where you're going. And look, similarly, I thought about King of Tokyo. You know, you're rolling the dice, you've got your big monsters. Where are you going to go with that?
This is the Yahtzee mechanic.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Look, you've got some fantastic dice games that take it to the next level. Castles of Burgundy, I know that's not one you particularly enjoyed because the theme is not so strong. But, you know, it's got a great dice mechanic.
Again. It's all about bloody farm animals.
Kingsburg, where you're using your dice to gain influence with different people in the court, and then you're fighting a monster at the end of each turn. It's quite simple, but it builds on that.
You did teach me that some time
ago. Yeah, we haven't played that one for a long time.
And I sucked.
Yeah. Well, hey, what a surprise. And one you like, if we're looking at dice and combining dice and worker placement, Alien Frontiers.
I'm on exactly the same
page. It's a beautiful game. Yeah. It's got fantastic production values, nice big chunky dice. Your dice are your workers. I love that game. It's really great.
Yeah, and again, it's something that's not too hard to explain, although it does suffer from a little bit of analysis paralysis because it's impossible to plan ahead until you actually roll your dice at the start.
Yeah, look, a couple more quick levels up. If you played Dominion or Thunderstone, one of these simple deck builders, you want to level up to something like Core Worlds. It has a bit more complexity, and look, there's a truckload of deck builders out there. Ticket to Ride, if you're looking for your choo-choo fix, Railways of the World. Railways of the World is a fantastic game. There's so many different maps. It's not that hard. You're shipping your little cubes to different places. You're building your train track. It is a really fun game.
So that's a pick-up-and-deliver game, is it?
Except you're actually building. It's more about route building, where you're building routes between cities because you want to ship blue cubes to blue cities and so on. So it's building the connections between cities, and then you get a bigger and bigger train. So at the start, you can only ship a cube from one place to another. Then you get a longer train. You can ship it more cities. You get more points.
You too can be the Minister for Infrastructure.
That's right. What else did I have? Small World. Look, if you wanted to talk area control, one of the granddaddies, El Grande.
Whoa.
Fantastic. Look, again, it's probably a bit of a step up, but hey, if your friends are in it for the long haul, it's worth it.
What about something like Civilization?
That's a long haul.
Okay, because Sid Meier's Civilization, of course, the computer game, well-known title, so something that's going to have appeal to you know, people who come from that world, but yeah, pretty complicated game, but I mean, it's not just area control, it's exploration as well. It's developing the technologies.
I did think of that in terms of tiles, because the next one I was thinking about was Carcassonne. Where do you go after you played your Carcassonne, your jigsaw puzzle without knobs? And one that I thought of actually that is not a huge leap up, and we play this quite a bit at the Hobart Game Society, Vikings. You're building your little islands with your tiles, putting your meeples on, getting your different points for the different places you go. It's not a huge jump in complexity from Carcassonne. It builds on the same sort of thing, but it has that nice auction mechanic. Look, there are so many places you can level up your gaming to go to the next level. I don't know. There's a few ideas anyway.
And you can always ask us questions.
Yeah, look, absolutely. Hit us up on Facebook and ask us questions. Have we had any good questions lately?
We had a cheeky question, and look, he wouldn't forgive me if I didn't mention this. Our friend Oren asked me if there was any game at all that yours truly would go into feeling totally confident of winning.
And the answer was no?
No, there isn't. I can't think of one. Anyway, look, that's us for the Dice Man Cometh on Edge Radio 99.3 FM. Mark, thank you for joining us.
Yeah, I'm glad I made it finally.
Hey, listen, before we go, I've got to ask your permission. I was wanting to... Could I bring my daughter on the show?
Yeah, of course.
She wants to be on the show.
Well, I want to bring my son on the show. He's dying to be on the show.
Well, maybe we could introduce him.
Yeah, we could have a kid punch out here. My 16-year-old against your 8-year-old.
He's totally going to kick your son's ass.
I know, she's the zombie guide queen.
Catch you next week on Edge Radio 99.3 FM.
Bye!
This has been an edit of The Dice Men Cometh from Edge Radio 99.3 FM, Hobart's independent youth station. Find us on Facebook and edgeradio.org.au.